Whether it's a radical Islamic attack in Orlando, Florida, or San Bernardino, California, or an urban gang shooting in Chicago, the reaction to these acts of terrorism and crime is, right, more gun control laws. And while the words of those seeking more laws sound like concern about lives and safety, truth is that their ideas rest on a foundation of sand, and their anti-Second Amendment attitude actually brings them financial gain from the many anti-gun forces. My next guest today is an expert on the facts about guns in America and recently experienced how the media is trying to rig the debate. His gun control, his upcoming book, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies, is going to once again expose how those who claim they want a safer America are in fact endangering America. He's also president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. John R. Lott, thank you for being here today.
Oh, great to talk to you. Thanks.
And it's johnrlott.com, crimeresearch.org. So we saw this past week in the House, in the well of the House of Representatives, a collection of Democrats calling for votes on gun control legislation. There was one lone voice crying fact. That was, of course, Republican Louie Gohmert, who said that it isn't the guns, it's radical Islam who's killing us. And this has Vice President Joe Biden makes a stop in Ireland and declares that we shouldn't be blaming immigrants for our problems. Of course, Joe Biden being the father of gun-free zone. So when you look at the legislation that is this time around being pitched, what are the points of the legislation and how pointless is it?
Well, all four of the bills that were voted on Monday in the Senate, none of them would have, unfortunately, stopped any of the mass public shootings. They wouldn't have stopped Orlando. They wouldn't have stopped a single attack during the Obama administration or even before that. And, you know, I want to do something. But I want to do something that's going to actually be relevant for these cases. And as you just mentioned about gun-free zones, unfortunately, the Orlando case was just like virtually all the others, and that was it occurred at a place where victims weren't able to go and defend themselves. You just had a case a couple months ago in Detroit where a father was concerned about his son's involvement in ISIS. The father went to the FBI. The FBI put a tap on the young man's phone. And they got an amazing recording where the person explained why he was planning on attacking one of the largest churches in the Detroit area. And he had two reasons. One was that the church was very well attended, had a lot of parishioners that attended each Sunday. He had cased the place for the attack. And that also, of the large churches, this was the one that explicitly told its members that they weren't allowed to have permitted concealed handguns on church property. And so he thought that that would make a great target because the victims wouldn't be able to go and defend themselves, and they'd have to wait until the police or somebody else arrived on the scene to stop them. So he had plenty of time to go and kill a number of people.
It's almost a twist on the old Willie Sutton phrase. They asked Willie Sutton, the bank robber, why do you rob banks? He said, well, that's because that's where the money is. It seems like the focal point this time around, too, is the AR-15. The AR-15 is being made to appear to the non-gun owner, the novice, whatever the case may be, to be an instrument of death. How factual is that with the AR-15? Is it a danger? Is it being made to be more of a violent weapon, to appear to be more of a violent weapon than it actually can possibly be?
Well, look, guns kill people. AR-15 is quite able to go and kill people. But guns can also defend people and prevent bad things from happening. In this case, I just think there's a lot of misinformation when Hillary Clinton or President Obama or others go and refer to the AR-15 as a weapon of war. That's just not right. You know, it looks like the M16 used by the Army, but the military wouldn't go and use an AR-15. There's no military around the world that would use the civilian version of this gun. There are three different types of guns. You have machine guns, where one pull of the trigger, bullets come out as long as you keep the trigger depressed. You have semi-automatic guns where one pull of the trigger fires one shot, automatically reloads, one pull of the trigger fires one shot, and so on. And then you have manually loaded guns. None of these attacks have involved machine guns. I know there's been a lot of discussion referring to AR-15s as machine guns, but they're not. They're semi-automatic rifles. The inside guts of these guns are identical to a small game semi-automatic hunting rifle. In fact, a lot of states will ban you using AR-15 for hunting deer because the bullets are considered too small and that they may simply wound rather than kill the animal. If you want to go and ban all semi-automatic guns, then there's some sense to, that's at least logically consistent, but to go and ban some semi-automatic guns simply because they look similar to an M16 doesn't make a lot of sense. And the problem that you face is if you were to ban all semi-automatics, you would harm law-abiding citizens because if you had multiple criminals, let's say two people break into your house, or if you fired a shot and missed and wanted to try to fire again, if you have manually loaded guns where you have to physically put a bullet in the chamber each time after the gun's fired, that can take some time, and you may wish that you didn't have to wait some seconds before you were able to actually go and use a gun again to stop an attack.
Talking with John Lott, who is president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. His upcoming book, released in the beginning of August, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Laws, johnrlott.com, crimeresearch.org are his respective websites, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. One of the ideas being floated there, it's tagged now as No Fly, No Buy. Anyone who is on the no-fly list or the terrorist watch list would not be permitted to apply for and obtain a gun. Well, first of all, that makes the assumption that anyone who wants to do some sort of attack of terrorism or crime is going to go the legitimate way. But is this at least a start of an idea of lessening the odds of someone who wants to do evil from doing that evil?
Well, I mean, everybody wants to try to keep bad people who are intending harm to others from getting a gun. The fact is that these terror watch lists and no-fly lists have changed dramatically over the years. Under the Obama administration, the terror watch list has grown something like 12 times from what it was at the end of the Bush administration. You've had a similar growth in the no-fly list. And these lists are used for many things now that have absolutely nothing to do with terrorists or even suspected terrorists. You have people on the list who the government simply wants to talk to for issues that have nothing to do with crime, nothing to do with terrorism, and nothing to do with the person who is they want to talk to actually committing a crime. You can have somebody on the list simply because the government wants to talk to them. You can have people on the list for many different reasons. And so that's one concern that you have. And while Dianne Feinstein's amendment that was put up and voted on in the Senate was talked about in terms of these types of lists. In fact, her language was much broader. She said that the Attorney General would be able to go and ban somebody from getting a gun if the Attorney General had a reasonable belief that the person was going to try to commit some type of crime. Now, reasonable belief means something well less than 50%. It's not saying the preponderance of the evidence, which would be a 50% slightly over 15%. What it's saying is reasonable, and that could mean anything from, you know, a 20%, 25% probability that the Attorney General thinks that somebody may be aiming to do something wrong generally. Again, not necessarily terrorism. And, you know, there's some real concerns about saying that somebody can't own a gun for protection just because the government believes that they have a reasonable belief that you might possibly go and do something wrong. And there's no checks on it. There's no committee. It's just an individual in the government can put somebody else's name on it, on this list. And what the Republicans were trying to do is say, okay, we want to have something that will alert the FBI when somebody who has been on these lists tries to go and buy a gun. But that if the FBI actually wants to keep you from buying a gun, then they're going to have to provide some evidence for that to one of these secret judges that are located in Washington, D.C. And they had 72 hours to do that. Now, it seems to me, I have a hard time understanding why the Democrats voted virtually unanimously against this bill, as well as the other bill that gave more money to NICS. I mean, if they think the background checks are a good thing, why not go and put more money into it? But in any case, the problem that you have is that you know, you're going to be disarming a lot of people without any proof. They could go and put an amendment up themselves that says 72 hours is long enough. We need a week or something there, but at least to have to provide some evidence for why the government thinks that there's a reasonable belief that somebody may go and commit a crime, rather than just disarming people. I don't know. It seems like something more could be done there.
His upcoming book, released beginning of August, will be The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. In the meantime, you can follow along with his information and facts on this issue at johnrlott.com, the website for the Crime Prevention Research Center, which he is the president of is crimeresearch.org. John Lott, thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it.